Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And I would just like to remember some words of St. Francis of Assisi, which I think are really just particularly apt at the moment. Where there is discord, may we bring harmony. Where there is error, may we bring truth. Where there is doubt, may we bring faith. And where there is despair, may we bring hope.
It's a legitimate political aspiration for people in our country to want to see a united Ireland. That's the Good Friday Agreement provides that framework, where you can recognise different political aspirations and a very clear pathway for those to be achieved. That's not where my focus and priority is now. And quite frankly, I don't believe it's where our priority and focus should be.
Welcome to Free State, everybody. It is Sunday evening when we're recording, the worst possible time of the week to do anything at all. My father used to always say, if you're serious about doing something, try doing it on a Sunday. So we are serious. We are serious men today.
The All-Ireland finals played on a Sunday.
Played, Joe. Amateur sport.
Okay.
We're talking about work things you don't enjoy doing.
You sound like the DUP. Or shall keep holy the Sabbath day.
Well, no, I know what he. Tim
Wells told me one time that he wouldn't even go to. He said it was outrageous. He said, Tim, who always called me the footballer from Londonderry, said that, and the health minister. He was the health minister who called gay blood an abomination. But Tim was a lovely man in other respects. No, but he told me once that he wouldn't even watch a soccer game on television on a Sunday.
Really?
Yeah.
But is that not...
He said it was a shame because himself and his son, as I recall, used to go to the Northern Ireland matches in Windsor Park. And then when they started doing the odd Sunday game in the soccer, he wasn't able to attend because he took, you know, that sort of thou shalt keep holy the Sabbath day very seriously.
Did Northern Ireland have a World Cup match
on
a Sunday?
That sectarianism. He was extremely committed to both.
Did Northern Ireland have a World Cup match on a Sunday during when they got to the World Cup in the 80s? Did they have one of the matches on a Sunday?
And somebody let me check through my list of give a fucks. No, it doesn't seem to be on it.
You know, well,
at first blush, it doesn't seem to be on it.
You were on the phone to me earlier today talking about the Premier League. You know, Liverpool, Arsenal losing. Liverpool weren't going to win anything with players like Harvey Elliott.
To be fair, I didn't see it.
Compared Harvey Elliott to a ballad singer from the 80s, which is a very good comparison. So you're
wasted. Get on the Manchester City B squad, the practice squad. But anyway,
what were
United Ireland or bust?
United Ireland or bust. Well, it looks like it's bust. It looks like it's all bust. Yes. If the work by that was published by the
John
IIEA, John Fitzgerald,
leading Fine Gael think tank.
Well, I don't know if it's I don't think it's right to call the IIEA a Fine Gael think tank.
Have you looked through their calendar of events and seen their guests?
Well, I looked through their events and. We're not going to, I looked through their website and I saw that one of their people is Dan O'Brien. He's got nothing to do with this report, but I'm just going to divert slightly to talk about Dan O'Brien. He's the chief economist of the Institute of International and European Affairs. Nostradamus, they used to call him. Nostradamus, they used to call him because he, you know, because of famous newspaper columns he wrote with headlines like this one from August 2016 with the headline, "Relax, Donald Trump can't win." So that was one of Dan's big calls. And, you know, newspapers are struggling these days. So it's probably just as well that he doesn't have that newspaper column anymore because, you know, very so much anyone can take. But Dan had nothing to do with this report, which said that it talked about the subvention, the money that the government has to, that currently the British government puts into Northern Ireland, which, you know, is the amount of money, the difference between the money that comes in and the money that has to be spent on public services. And in the United Kingdom, which for the purposes of the subvention, you know, we will include Northern Ireland, there are only two regions in the United Kingdom that bring in money. One is London and the other is the Southeast, excluding London. So the rest of the United Kingdom needs money from central government. And this report said, now it took as a central figure, it said that in the event of United Ireland, 11 billion was the figure they said would be needed. This could rise to 20 billion. And the reaction from certain people has been
funny. I counted a barrister's question once. He's a very long-winded barrister, and there were 187 words in it. He couldn't hold a candle to you.
I wasn't asking you a question. I was just talking.
Yeah. I mean, the report says that...
Hold on a second. I'm just going to jump back. I think everybody listening will be finding it hilarious that you have actually tried to have a go at me for speaking so long. I wasn't asking a question. Yeah. I was just setting up, yeah, you know, what we're going to talk about today. And now I'm going to hand...
I'm glad to hear that. The headline figure in the report is that Irish unification will cost 20 billion euro a year. One thinks of Austin Powers, 100 billion, 200 billion. And the report, which I'll come back to, but the report, it's not a research paper. It's 3,000 words long, about the same length, say, as one of Paul Kimmage's interviews in the Sunday Independent Sports section. And it was, I mean, I think, it looks very much as though it was rushed out in time for the Fine Gael Ardesh so that there'd be a headline figure. The report said 20 billion a year. Any concessions by the UK on the debt and pensions should not be relied upon, which is guff, and would not be clear in any event until after a final settlement was agreed between the United Ireland and the UK, and that's true. But it said funding the needs of the people in Northern Ireland and the United Ireland will put huge financial pressure on the people of Ireland, resulting in an immediate major reduction in their living standards. And that was the headline grabber. You know, the thought struck me, an immediate major reduction in their living standards, like the vulture funds, beloved of Fine Gael and the establishment parties. And it said that even under the most favourable circumstances, likely to be at least two decades before, productivity gap between North and South could be substantially narrowed. And, you know, it reminded me, a friend of mine from KPMG, who's, you know, sort of very high up there, reminded me of the old line, whenever I sent him the report and asked him what he thought of it. And he said, economics is only useful as a form of employment for economists, particularly... He added this in the email, particularly dickheads like Fitzgerald. So he went on then to do a rundown. But it reminded me a bit of Gary Stevenson, who we had in the podcast, you know, the Citibank trader who helped to sort of break the world financial system. And he said to us, you know, the only decent economists are traders. The problem with that is that they're not allowed to give you an opinion. So you have to settle. You have to settle for people who aren't financially clever enough, you know, to make it. And, you know, the reality here is the debt, the UK's debt will be written off. We'll come to that in due course because...
You say that that's golf.
Well, there's a whole raft of eminent research on that, and the pensions bill, for example, will be paid by the UK because that's their obligation. We pay into the UK. Obviously, new pensions will be a different matter. People who are starting to pay in the United Ireland, things like defence and other allocations aren't relevant to the North, but all of these are included to get a big headline figure. To simply raise anxiety levels. And the most important point in the entire report, which isn't explored at all, is the second paragraph in page 5, conclusions, that the inward investment, you know, and the freeing of the North from its sort of colonial status with the UK could lead to sort of an unknown amount of new business, you know, amelioration of corporation tax rates, you know, very educated population, all of which could substantially reduce the cost of unification. But the 20 billion figure is based on the premise that nothing will change.
Well, it's based on the
premise that nothing, that the North will remain stagnant, that nothing will change.
Well, first of all, the central estimate was 11 billion. It wasn't. It could rise to 20 billion. That's not correct. It says nothing would change. The one thing that would change immediately if the 20 billion figures we reach is that immediately social welfare payments and public sector pay would go to the same rate in the North as it is in the Republic. That's the thing that would bump it up as well, because at the moment there's a huge discrepancy there. Whether that would have to happen, that would happen over a period of time. You would think.
I have serious problems with the IAEA. You know, you look at the nature of the personnel there. I mean, 4 years ago, just 4 years ago, the same author said that the cost of reunification would be 30 billion a year. That's just 4 years ago. Now we're down to 20 billion. And this top economist who spearheaded the research on a United Ireland is Fine Gael royalty. He's Garrett Fitzgerald's son. I mean, his grandfather was a founding member of Fine Gael. And, you know, we all recall in the North that as Taoiseach, his father, Garrett Fitzgerald, not only supported but admired Margaret Thatcher's position on, for example, the hunger strikes. You know, and he had a dread and loathing of our community, which is, you know, similar to any of these sort of right-wing capitalistic parties.
Well, when you say he had a loathing of your community, who are you talking about?
His father, Gareth.
By community, what do you mean?
I'm talking about the Northern Nationalist community.
Well, this is a man who the Anglo-Irish Agreement, which, you know, most people on all sides agreed that without the Anglo-Irish Agreement, there would have been no Good Friday Agreement. It was looking back now, it seems kind of quaint, but it was a hugely significant thing at the time, because it gave the Irish government it gave them a secretariat in the North. It gave them a position in the North.
You're throwing your hat into the ring for editor of the Irish Times.
I'm just saying that to say that he had no.
I like down to earth stories to find out what a person is really like and how they interact with people in real life. And I mean, Gareth Fitzgerald was part of an extremely right wing northern hating movement. I was at I was a young starry eyed idealistic student at Trinity. I went to a debate where Gerry Adams was coming. And it was a huge event. You know, we were standing on the windowsills inside, and Garrett Fitzgerald's speechwriter was one of the debaters. And I have to say, to hear him speaking, it was like listening to one of those cruel English aristocrats, you know, who people the conservative benches in the Houses of Parliament. It was incredible to think that this was an Irishman. I mean, whenever the hunger strike started, which I always look at as a litmus test, you know, for people and whether they've got a humane streak, whether they were genuinely patriotic, for example, just what sort of person they were. I mean, I abhorred violence and was absolutely opposed to the IRA's campaign, as you know. But at the same time was heartbroken by what was happening to our boys in the HBOX and, you know, the whole regime of oppression that surrounded the Northern Colony, you know, which is more and more starting to come to light. But in any event, Fitzgerald absolutely supported Margaret Thatcher's position of refusing to grant these simple, easy demands to the hunger strikers. And he said on an interview on Today Tonight, which I've watched from the 14th of August 1981, that he was content that the British government was doing everything that could be done, and that he was very concerned about ongoing events bolstering support for Sinn Féin in Ireland and in America. And that was the key thing. That was the key thing. And some of the things that happened at the time, you know, I think cannot be washed away. The stain that's on Garrett Fitzgerald cannot be washed away. I mean, he was the one who ensured that the hunger strike march in July 81 in Dublin was dealt with by the guards. And I mean, it was bloody and savage. 200 people were hospitalized. In 1981, Kieran Doherty, who had been elected in the Dáil, who was a hunger striker from Belfast, as you know, had stood for election in the Dáil as a hunger striker in order to try and garner public support, the maximum public support for their position. He was elected, and forgive me if it sounds as though I take this personally, because I do take this sort of inhumanity personally. Alfie, Kieran's father, requested that Garrett Fitzgerald, who was the Taoiseach of Ireland at the time, come and visit his dying son in the Mays prison. And he said, "My son's dying wish as an elected member of your parliament is that you and Deputy Prime Minister Michael O'Leary visit him in prison." And Fitzgerald refused because he said that he was satisfied that the British government were doing everything that they could. And just a few weeks later, Kieran Doherty was dead. He was satisfied at how Margaret Thatcher's government were handling the matter. Alfie, who was heartbroken, just said, I just cannot believe it. I just find it hard to believe how any leader of the Irish nation could behave in this way. And at that stage, the UPI reported, if you look at their archives, you know, they sort of the equivalent of the Associated Press, young Mr. Doherty, who's 25, has now gone without food for 62 days to press 5 basic demands for prison reform. His health continues to deteriorate, according to a spokesperson from the Northern Ireland office. And inmate Kevin Lynch, who is 24 and has refused food for 61 days, is, quote, rapidly sinking. Dr. Fitzgerald, who was the leader of Ireland, refused to visit the Mays prison because he was satisfied that Margaret Thatcher had responded properly and was doing everything that she could, and the Irish government had nothing that they could add. What do we say about that? What do we say about that gross neglect, that gross sort of indifference to this terrible suffering, regardless of what you think of what the lads were in the HBOX for, and many, many terrible things had been done by them. But regardless of that, in the context of a political struggle, in the context of the people of the North fighting against this empire, this colonial oppression, which had happened in the South, in the 1900s, leading up to the War of Independence and then freedom for the South, exactly the same. What do you make of Carrick Fitzgerald treating those people in that way?
Well, the thing I'd say about that, and it is heartbreaking when you put it like that, and it's, but the atmosphere was so, and the atmosphere then,
he
you know.
He didn't give a shit, Dion. He didn't give a shit.
But no, but Joe, when you see the way you, like most people didn't,
shit under his shoe. That was the truth of it. The fucking Irish Prime Minister. On another occasion, he agreed to meet with the families of the hunger strikers, but he refused to meet the family of Bobby Sands, who was the first to die, as you know. And he was the officer in command of the hunger strikers. And he also refused to meet with Raymond McCreesh's sister, who had died on the 21st of May, 1981. He refused to meet with her. She wanted to meet with him, to plead with him, to intervene. And she had all sorts of ideas. Sister of this boy who had been dragged into this conflict, you know, like all these other young men had been dragged into this conflict. And he refused to meet with her.
But you see, even your premise there...
The publicity around that was so bad that he then subsequently agreed to meet with the other families. Let me give you the account of that meeting from the Irish Times, from that time, contemporaneous account. During the subsequent meeting with the other families, two of Thomas McElwee's sisters, Mary and Nora, the McElwees are from Blahy, sort of a neighbouring parish to ours, broke down and left. Mary McElwee was distraught. She told the media outside that he's doing nothing. He's doing nothing. Fitzgerald then ordered the Gardaí to remove the remaining families from the meeting. His response afterwards was, in the words of Eamon Sweeney, to, quote, lay all the blame for the hunger strikers on the Republican movement and to suggest an immediate unilateral end to their military campaign. I mean, and that's, you know, if that sounds uncannily similar to what Israel and their apologists are demanding, you know, suggesting that if only Hamas weren't there, if only they would lay down their guns, then everything would be fine. It's Hamas who are causing this problem. It's not this terrible oppression. It's not the British. You know, sure, we celebrate what happened to us and their terrible oppression against us in the South. But when it comes to you people in the north, you savages, he told the guards to forcibly remove them from the meeting. And Thomas McElwee died the following week. He was only 23 years of age. What do we make of that human being? What do we make of Garrett Fitzgerald? Do we say he was a friend of Northern Nationalists? That he tried to assist us? That he behaved as a patriot?
Well, I think you can say he wasn't a friend of the hunger strikers. He wasn't a friend of the families of the hunger strikers. Well, you say he was, like, how many people in the North among the nationalist community rejected, you know, didn't vote for, you know, Sinn Féin, voted for the SDLP, rejected the violence of the IRA at the time?
Bobby Sands was
the majority. The majority.
Bobby Sands was Bobby Sands stood for election in Fermanagh South Tyrone, which was an absolutely safe unionist seat, and he won it. He stood in West Belfast. Sorry, my mistake. He stood in West Belfast and he won it.
I thought
120,000 people attended Bobby Sands' funeral. You know, for a guy who had no support, 120,000 people went to his funeral.
He was from Anna, wasn't he? He was from Anna in South Tyrone.
Was that not Owen McCarron? That was Owen Curran, I think, and Bobby Sands stood, I think, in Belfast. Anyway, both of them were elected, and Kieran Doherty was elected to the Dáil again. And don't forget that Fitzgerald also passed the Extradition Act. His crew passed the Extradition Act in 1987, which brought an end to the sort of the defence against extradition of suspects from the South to the North, who could plead that, you know, that there was terrible oppression in the North, that these were political acts, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, basically, you were talking about Margaret Thatcher,
the male embodiment of Margaret Thatcher when it came to that. And we know that Fine Gael, and this is why it's important in relation to AIEA and the people who populate that, including John Fitzgerald, and we'll come back to some of his predictions in a moment.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
No. I mean, John Bruton, for example, thoroughly admired Margaret Thatcher. He admired everything about her. One of the most perfidious, horrific influences of the 20th century, who was the person who began the destruction of the National Health Service, destroyed working communities all over Great Britain, destroyed the trade unions, you know, opened the era of oligarchs, which we see what's happening now. I mean, there are now 2,500 food banks in the UK. People no longer can live in a council house because she allowed people to sell them off. Ultimately, the vulture funds bought them in huge numbers. So, you know, people are now spending 60% of their income to rent a home that they used to be able to rent from the state for buttons. Whenever Margaret Thatcher resigned, well, by force, do you know what John Bruton said about her in the Dáil?
I don't.
Well, I checked this out. I brought it up. I've got it in front of me. The British Prime Minister, Mrs. Margaret Thatcher, is a politician of the most sincere convictions, who works with relentless energy to achieve those things in which she believed. Irish people will always remember in particular her negotiation of the historic Anglo-Irish Agreement. I pause to remind you.
I know what you're going to say.
I pause to remind you that Peter Taylor told us that she so loathed the agreement that her permanent secretary had to hold her hand and force her signature onto the page. He said, Margaret Thatcher moved Anglo-Irish relations to a new and much more productive plane in defending that agreement, not only against her opponents, but even with greater courage against her friends. She showed a remarkable willingness to learn. I was like, who the fuck is he talking about? And a willingness to act on what she had learned. Because this is a mistake. She also showed, this is one of my favorites, to be a politician committed to the primacy of democratic methods. I mean, this was the woman who sent the SAS into the North to shoot to kill, of determining issues in her fight against terrorism. Of course, you know, Fine Gael always have to get that in. And on behalf of the Fine Gael party, I wish her well in her future work, and I wish her successor all the best in her new and difficult role. Meet Simon Harris, another big admirer of Margaret Thatcher. You know that as well, of course.
I saw that, yeah. I saw his,
you know, whenever people
his tweet
were quite rightly decrying the enormous damage she did to the people of Great Britain. He said, sickening to hear the comments of so-called, of course, Republicans, as always, you know, because that always gets a bit of a cheer at the old people's convention, a.k.a. the Fine Gael Ardèche. Sickening to hear the comments of so-called Republicans about Margaret Thatcher, a woman who was democratically elected, you know. And I mean, I pause to say that it was Margaret Thatcher who famously told Peter Mandelson once, "The Irish are all liars and none of them are to be trusted." You know, and yet these Fine Gael types climbing over each other to lick her high heels and praise her, you know. Well, and that look at, I tell you what galls me more than anything, you know, and it's all coming to an end, my friend, I can assure you of that. This sort of looking down their noses at us. Gareth Fitzgerald's speechwriter that night, I remember him.
What was his name?
I can't remember his name, but I can remember exactly the way he talked and the arrogance of him and the arrogance of his body language and the way he tried to belittle Gerry Adams, you know, and the looking down his nose, you know. And he was every inch, you know, the Walter Macken, British landlord, you know, going, you know, riding through the peasantry on Fair Day, whipping them out of his way, you know, contemptuously. I mean, Michael Lillis was Gareth Fitzgerald's diplomatic advisor through the hunger strike. Well, you probably know him. You know, he probably used to have dinner in your house. But anyway, he said in a letter to the Financial Times in 2022, Margaret Thatcher is not an admired figure in the iconography of Irish nationalism, nor would she have wanted to be. And you know, this is the nub of these people. She has, however, earned the respect and retrospective gratitude of Irish grown-ups. You know, not these fucking northerners, not these fucking povs, you know, who want affordable homes and want rents to come down and want to be able to afford groceries and want to be able to afford their energy bills. But the grown-ups, the people who vote for no-fault evictions, 5,000 families evicted in the last 12 months, 5,000 families, you know, the people who support the vulture funds, you know. 10 different constituencies in the North, Rory Hearn, the associate professor of social studies and housing at Minas University. 10 different constituencies last year didn't have a single affordable home built in Ireland, not a single affordable home. She has, however, earned the respect and retrospective gratitude of Irish grown-ups for her seriousness and constancy of purpose. You know. Doesn't that just sum it up, you know?
Yeah, look, there's always that tendency to kind of want to kind of get close to and be seduced by that sort of British establishment or that. And Mrs. Thatcher, even, you know, that was, she was even beyond that. There was something about that, her, that certainly there were certain people who felt that they, you know.
And thoroughly corrupt. I mean, she palled about with Pinochet, her son.
Well, her record on apartheid, everything was just appalling. I would say her, if anything, her legacy is even worse, because while one of the reasons why she actually stayed in power for so long was that she was actually more pragmatic than the Iron Lady kind of image suggested, and she managed to sort of, she did compromise, she did actually back down more than the whole kind of the ladies not for turning.
But the point is
that the people who have come after her, the people in that sort of Tory cult of worship of Thatcher, they see her for the myth only, and pursuing that myth has been as damaging and has been as ruinous for Britain as her own time. Because you look at it now, you look at Rishi Sunak, he's a Thatcher fanboy. It is horrendous when you cling to that. But what I want to talk about is this. Can I just add one thing?
It's the gleeful cruelty of it. It's the inhumanity of their project, which they know. Fine Gael know, for example, Fianna Fáil know, that no fault eviction is going to cause terrible misery. You know, they know that their policies in relation to housing and rental costs, etc., are going to cause terrible, terrible misery and fear. You know, and you know, they know the statistics. You know that 5 years ago there were 7,000 people homeless. Now there are 15,000 people homeless. You know, but they know that their policies are going to cause this terrible inequality. But they persist with it anyway. and then they lie about it. But I wanted to finish. I wanted to finish this episode with this point, and obviously we can pick it up again on Thursday. The Irish government, to my knowledge, is the only government in the world that I can ever recall which has a constitutional aim, a constitutional objective in the constitution of a United Ireland, but no plan to achieve it, and more importantly, a refusal to do anything to achieve it. Article 3.1 of the constitution: it is the firm will of the Irish nation in harmony and friendship to unite all the people who share the territory of the island of Ireland. Right. Recognising the United Ireland should be brought about by only peaceful means with the consent of a majority of the people democratically expressed in both jurisdictions in the island. And yet, we see these mealy-mouthed sort of phrases from Simon Harris. We'll come back to all of this on Thursday. From Leo, from Michael Martin. And I believe strongly that they are absolutely opposed to a United Ireland. But they can't say that. They have to say, oh yes, I mean, of course, we're in favour of a United Ireland. But I mean, it's not a priority at the moment, but, you know, and not a single piece of work has been done to move towards that aim. We'll pick it up.
Well, we'll pick it up, but we will, because there's an awful lot to talk about in this, because when we talk about Garrett Fitzgerald, we talk, you know, and you mentioned his father being a founding member of Fine Gael, he was also somebody who fought in 1916. So when we look at history, and when we look at what we're talking about in 2024 in United Ireland in the future, all these things are more complicated, and all of these things, Garrett, and everyone is coming from different places.
Garrett wouldn't have so gleefully allowed the men of 1920 to die in hunger strike. It would have been a different matter then, because they were patriots for Ireland. His father was one of them, you know. But when it came to us, you know.
Well,
it didn't suit the political agenda, you know, and his particular instinctive cruelty was what came to the fore.
Yeah, I think I don't agree with the idea of him being a cruel necessarily. I think, you know, in every aspect of Irish life, he did do. I'm not not a huge admirer of Garrett Fitzgerald, but he did do certain things in Ireland. He was a kind of a modernising force in Ireland as well.
I'll tell you what, he was, very little happened under his watch. He was an inhumane shit towards people, you know, and that's how I judge people. How do you treat other human beings? And particularly, how do you treat other human beings who are vulnerable and at their lowest ebb? You know, and we saw how he did. Dress it up whatever way you want to.
Thanks everyone for listening.
Irish fighters, it's the flag we Republicans claim. It can never belong to free speakers, for you brought on it nothing but shame. Take it down from the mass, Irish fighters, it's the flag we Republicans claim. It can never belong to free speakers, for you brought on it nothing but shame.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.